Yes, yes, this is DJ Vice, and I'm listening, you're listening, we all listening to Rebel Radio right here. And you know what else? Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to Rebel Radio. My guest today is my man Vice, aka DJ Vice. You might know him from Power 106 back in the day. You might know him from the Electric Taco YouTube show that he hosts, or from his DJing all over the world. He's got residencies. I think back in the day it was Body English. Now he's at Marquee in Vegas, and he's playing every hot city in the world. He's also a producer, making a lot of his own music, and you know, I've known him a long time. He's one of the nicest guys in the game, and it turns out one of the smartest guys too. And so he's got some great lessons for us today. He's going to teach us the art of the humble brag, and kind of how he uses a little bit of confidence to get him where he's trying to go. He's going to tell us what he learned from Tony Robbins, and how he's been able to jump into different businesses, including opening his own sneaker shops. Good stuff coming up from DJ Vice right after our EDM.com track of the week.
Got a stack of $100 bills, flexing on them haters. Now I'm on my own, and I'm making moves. Now I don't need your fucking help like I used to. Got a stack of $100 bills, flexing on them haters. Got a stack of $100 bills, flexing on them haters. Now I'm on my own, and I'm making moves. Now I don't need your fucking help like I used to.
Solid gold is not mixed. I got it all to myself. Narcotics up in my system. I praise God for my help. When I'm not sleeping, I see fuck boys out creeping. I keep all my girls a secret, but it's been a long damn weekend. These bitches keep calling my phone, but I don't wanna talk. I keep it real, smoking on that strong leaf. I got big bread for that deal. Yeah, shawty just want you for cash. She ain't putting out for me. She bust it wide open, all up in the mouth.
Got a stack of $100 bills, flexing on them haters. Got a stack of $100 bills, flexing on them haters. Now I'm on my own.
Yo, that was our track of the week from EDM.com. That was C-Trox with a track called Used To. That's on the hip-hop channel, soundcloud.com/hip-hop. Check that out. And right now, check out DJ Vice on Rebel Radio.
Used to not get drunk, not a used to not smoke skunk. Now I live all by myself and I do whatever I want.
Gotta, you don't play here that much, right? Nah. Well, yeah, not really. I'll do now that Tao Avenue open, I'll do once a month on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
That's it though.
Yeah. LA clubs suck.
Yeah.
We could talk about that.
It's right. No, it's probably better for your home life though, to be like, go on the road, work, and then not that you don't work when you're here, but like,
right,
as far as being
out all
night.
I don't have to be at a club, And also, like, I feel like when I used to do nights here a lot, like residencies weekly and two times a week, no one cares after a while. They're like, dude, we don't care to go see him. Pay your own time. Or and then in Vegas, they're like, what do we care? And all the LA people, like, we could see him anytime in LA. So why would we go to Marquee to see him? So after a while, I cut back. I was like, no, I gotta like stop doing gigs in LA. It was easy money to be in LA and just work and go home, but like, but now home life's a lot smoother. You're like, I could go to bed. I went to bed like at 11:30 last night.
Nice.
It's great.
Yeah.
But then Vegas nights, I'm going to bed at like 4:35.
Of course, I don't know how you do that with a kid and then
flipping,
like, kids up.
Flip flop back and forth, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
I did my research though on the way. I was listening to a bunch of different little segments. I heard like Chalk. I heard the G Funk West Coast guy.
Nice.
That's a trip. Like
did you know about that documentary?
Not at all.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm dying to see it.
But
I just talked to Paul Stewart yesterday, who's like in it quite a bit. I'm sure.
I actually have a little bit of G Funk roots.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I used to be Nate Dogg's DJ.
No shit.
Yeah, and it was like for like I used to be a show DJ.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then I was.
How that happened through the station?
Yeah, through Damian Young, through DeMizza. I was he like put me in the loop with Nate Dogg, and I got to like go in there and And he's like, yo, I need to do shows. Like, how do we do this? And I sat down with Pro Tools and I chopped up, like, because I was like, how do you make a Nate Dyke show? Basically just hooks, right? Like big ass hooks, like a big ass hook, a long hook show.
Yeah.
But we chopped up like verses and his hooks. And then I would be telling him like, yo, I think you should do this song. He's like, no, I don't want to perform that. I'm like, yo, like we play that in the club. People want to hear that.
Yeah.
He's like, really? And I'm like, yeah. So it was dope. Like we got to be in sessions with him at his crib.
Nice.
When he was dating that actress, really hot girl. Forgot he was dangerous, and we'd be there kicking in, and she'd be cooking food and bringing us food, and Nate would be like, we'd be working on like a show, and then Nate would be like, hold on, I need to record this hook for someone, and we're like, all right, and we like sit there, and he would literally sit down and have a microphone, and he had like a bowl of like chicken and rice, and he was eating, and then he would just like his engineer would like record, and he would like cut a hook, as he sat in a chair.
No way.
And I was like, this is insane.
That's crazy.
So we did that. I DJed for Quick. I was Quick's DJ for like 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Check it. 1991, while everybody else was smoking a split, I was thinking of the funky hits about hoochies and players and getting drunk and off that bud. I was doing the things they hadn't heard of. But foolish was I to think that it was.
Yeah, then I realized I wasn't thug enough to be on the road with all those guys. I was like, I need to get off the road with these guys.
This doesn't fit me, man.
Yeah. I'm going to get killed.
Yeah. No, it gets pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember with Quick, we were in like Arizona one time, and he's like, we finished the show. He's like, yo, so we're going to run out the back door out this side, and we're going to jump into the vans and take off. And I'm like, why? He's like, we can't go out this way. Those dudes are waiting for us over there. We got to go this way. I was like, yo, I can't be on the road like that.
That's enough of that.
So Quick. I did some shows with Warren.
Wow.
There was a lot of different like artists.
That's more than a little.
Yeah, right?
That's dope.
Yeah, there was a bunch. And then from there, I was like, one time he was like, yo, you need to go meet with Daz. He needs help with his show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like getting in this whole world with these dudes. Yeah. I was sitting with Daz and Corrupt and in some crazy sessions. Yeah.
I bet.
So it was a good time.
That was fun stuff for a minute.
Early 2000s being on the radio was like a prime time of radio.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. I want to hear how you go from that to what you're doing now. But I always like to start back at the beginning.
Okay.
So tell me about the first record you ever bought.
The first record I ever got was because it was like such a big moment, because I was always into music and I was listening to like KDAY in LA. I'm born and raised in LA, so I listened to KDAY. And when I remember, I went to, I want to say it was like the Warehouse in LA. It was called like the record shop.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was like, okay, you get to get like one vinyl.
Yeah.
So it was like a big moment, and I was like digging through. It was at the Eagle Rock Mall where I'm born and raised, and I was digging through the... There was like a vinyl section. I'm digging through. And I was like, well, the ideal thing I should do is buy a compilation vinyl, because I get like 8 songs from different artists.
Yeah.
So I bought one of those, like, I forgot what the record was, but it was like a Rap's Greatest or something like that. And it was like, it showed like a little trophy on it. I'm going to find this record. It showed a little trophy. But it had like, I remember my standout song on that album was Dougie Fresh, The Show was on there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this is like, this is hip hop. This is so dope. And I would bump that. And Orange Juice Jones, Rain. Yep. Yep. Walking in the Rain was on there. My Adidas was on there. But for some reason,
I feel like I might have that record.
It's like a blue cover with like a trophy in the middle, and it's like, and it's a compilation. So I thought that was like my game was tight. I was like, I'm gonna buy this one because I got 8 different songs.
Yeah.
So I went with that.
But that was
like, that's what kind of really got me like hooked on listening to records.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was gonna DJ yet, but I was already into it like at the age of like 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my brother picked Depeche Mode.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it was Enjoy the Silence or something around there.
Sure.
And he was like, that's stupid. Why are you listening to that music? Like, you got to listen to this.
Yeah.
And it was so cool because we would argue over music.
Yeah.
So he thought my music was dumb. And I'm like, then we shared the same room. We grew up in the same room together. So he'd be listening to Depeche Mode. And then I had to wait till he like fell asleep
because
he didn't want me listening to that. Then I would bump my album and like put my speaker, my ear up to the speaker and listen to that
that's
album.
Hilarious. It's such a great story because like so much of that never happens anymore.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to pick one record. because right. anything streaming, you can have it all.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to, like, now everybody has earbuds, right. so you don't have to share the room.
That excitement's gone. Yeah. Because I have an 18-year-old son, and it's a great time for them, and at the same time, like, I don't want to be the old school mentality thinking where I'm like, this is whack. Like, it's a great time because
yeah.
they can get anything and everything they want at the drop of a dime. So he's like, oh, the Kendrick came out today. Boom! I already have it. It's in my phone. It's downloaded. You don't have reception in your dorm, but I download it when I'm outside the dorm, and I can listen to the whole thing when I'm in the dorm. Like, yeah. so it's like everything's accessible, yeah. and that's dope because you get to really immerse yourself in music. Mm-hmm. The part that I feel is the disconnection is the excitement of like, how am I gonna get this?
For sure.
Who am I gonna borrow money from to get this? Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. who am I gonna beg to get this? Or like,
do you see that as a father? Do you see that in with something else, not music?
Yeah, I think with even shows now, I mean, yeah. there's so many shows, there's so many, I don't know, when I grew up, I didn't know there was that many music festivals right. or anything. Like,
sure.
I grew up in LA, I got to go to like a Unity, and that was such a big moment to like catch yeah. a new artist performing. Unity was like a dope underground hip hop thing, but now it's like, I mean, Coachella is happening, and then mm-hmm. there's this festival and that festival, and there's just so much. It's like overload.
Yeah.
It's music overload, yeah, I believe. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you can have a big weekend every weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Between Vegas and here.
You can go to Vegas. You can see
festivals.
You can hit EDM Fest, and you can hit a snowboarding festival that has music, but yeah. you can see your snowboarders. It's like, it's everywhere. So then I feel like your taste elevates, and you get even pickier on what you like because there's so much coming to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So how'd you get started DJing?
So at 9 years old, I got into like, I knew I loved hip hop. Like that was my shit. And I listened to KDAY and I listened to Julio G. I listened mm-hmm. to Joe Cooley, Aladdin. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea who these people were. This is pre-Google. This is pre-anything that you could figure out who these people were. But I just was like, what are they doing and how are they doing this?
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was. And then around 10 years old, 11 years old, I went to a family party and I saw the DJ, where the DJ's playing music and people are dancing.
That's cool.
And that's my moment where I saw Jordan play basketball. When someone sees Jordan play ball for the first time and they're like, or Kobe play ball, or whoever your idol is on the court, and you're like, I want to be that good, or I want to do that. That was my moment where I was like, I want to DJ, because that one person is controlling this whole room mm-hmm. for the greater happiness of everyone's mood. And like everyone's...
What was he playing?
He was playing like high energy disco, uh-huh. like Stevie B, Cover Girls. And it wasn't yeah. even about that. Like, yeah, I was yeah, just sure. like, yeah, yeah. But it was just like... And I knew that music because I have older sisters.
But like, I asked that because you remember it.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, yeah. Taps, like Forbidden Lover. Kano, I'm Ready. Yeah. Like, these are, yeah, Google all these songs if you're too young to remember this, and you're like, oh, wow, they sampled that for Whoop, there it is.
For sure.
So when I was listening to all that happen, I was like, dang, everyone's having the best time of their life. Like, I want to be able to do that. I want to mm-hmm. create this energy and this mood and direct the crowd. And then we left the party, and I had no idea how to do it. So right. I was like, where am I going to get, where do you even find this stuff, or who is yeah. this, or... And so a year later, we were at a family friend's house and their son was a DJ. And I'm like, here it is.
A year.
Yeah, a year later.
How crazy.
So I was like, this is it. Yeah. This is what he was doing. And I just talked to him and I was like, yo, man, I need to do this with you. Like, whatever you want me to do, I'm in. I'll help you out. Blah, blah, blah. I'll carry your crates. I'll carry speakers. And I got in the mix. He was like, yeah, no problem. I need you to help me set up at every gig, carry mm-hmm. records, set up the lights, the smoke machine, all this stuff. And your parents will let you roll with me because our parents know each other. And he's like an older brother in a sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. So I was like, perfect. So it got me in the game at like 12 years old of DJing and
nice.
Being the assistant to the DJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then do you remember the first time you like stepped up?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was at a high school dance that he was DJing and I was like, The Apprentice on the side, and I'd set everything up. And he wanted to go dance with a girl. So he was like, yo, you're on. Just put the headphones on me. And he got off the decks and, like, went out.
Nice.
And I was like, I was shocked. I was like, oh, what do I, like, oh, okay. I remember that moment. I was like, I got this. And I remember the song that was playing was Afro Rican, Give It All You Got. And I was like, all right, I got this. Give it all you got. Give it all you got. Give it all you got. Give and I'm like trying to cue up the next record in my headphones. I don't even know what I was going to drop. I was like queuing it up. And I was queuing it up. And then you just hear. And the record ended on the other side. And I looked and I was like, and I looked at the crowd and I just dropped to the floor. And I hid behind the decks.
No way.
Behind the coffin. I was hiding under there like, shit, what do I do? And it's just like. So I like reach up with one hand over the decks. And I try and grab the needle, and I started the song over again. Uh-huh. And he comes running up. He's like, what did you do like that? And you can hear people like, boo. You can like, so I start, and I'm like, yo, I froze. And he's like, get off.
Oh, man.
So my first time DJing was like crash and burn. Yeah. And then after that, I was like, I can do it. So
how did you get the confidence? Like, some people might have just said, okay, obviously I'm not.
Yeah. I wasn't going to let it down because I still had that dream of, I think, that wedding DJ that I was at that was rocking the crowd. I was like, I'm going to be able to do that one day.
Yeah.
So I eventually, like, he let me jump back on at another gig. And then I just did high school dances, house parties, weddings, bar mitzvahs, quinceañeras, like barbecues, ditching parties, like anything and anywhere I could DJ, I was in. I was game, yeah. It wasn't even trying to make money or trying to do it. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I just want to play for people.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'm excited to have a new sponsor on board. This week we got Blue Apron. If you're into cooking, Blue Apron's about to make it a whole lot easier for you. They're going to save you time, money, make it more convenient, enable you to cook with family, friends, whatever. What they do is they deliver right to your door. Fresh and healthy recipes ready for you to cook. They deliver all over the country, 99% of the country. They can get it straight to your door, and it's just the exact amount of each ingredient, so you're not wasting food. It's healthy. The food is all responsibly sourced and sustainable and all that good stuff that makes it good for you and your family. And for me, I like that it's never the same recipe, so lots of variety. Check out this week's menu. And you'll get your first three meals free because you're a Rebel Radio listener. That's first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/rebel. I think you'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/rebel. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. So then when we met, you were you had, I think, just got to Power.
Mm-hmm. That was like, I got on radio in Los Angeles in 1998.
Okay.
So Power 106 Los Angeles, at the time, their listenership was like 1.8 million listeners or something crazy. Huge. And it's also outside of KDAY, it's the station I grew up on. After KDAY was off the air, it's like I listened to Power. Yeah. And that's what introduced me to like really dance music as well, because they were mm-hmm. playing house and hip hop mixed mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. It was like hard house in LA at the time. So I was mixing house records, and at weddings and dances and everything, you DJed, you had to play everything. So the way I got on, though, I was DJing at a club, and I met the Baker Boys' older brother. Mm-hmm. And the Baker Boys were the biggest on-air radio jocks at the time, DJs and personalities. And their older brother was the marketing promotions guy around them. Yep. So I was like, I gotta hang with this dude. This dude's the connect to the radio.
Sure.
And
like me.
The hustle was like real. Like I was just out any way I can meet people. And it was for the right reasons. I always felt like I always try to connect with people for the right reasons. I think it's always good to humble brag about yourself. Mm-hmm. To tell these people like I know what I can do and I know what I'm worth and I know I can help you do this or this or this. Mm. So I hung with Frank V of the Baker Boys crew family, and he introduced me to his brothers, and I was around the radio station nonstop. I was seeing artists come in the station from when Biggie and Pun and like Old Dirty Bastard. And I'm around all these people, and I'm still in high school.
Wow.
About to graduate, knowing I don't want to go to college. I don't want to see college. Yeah. Like, I want to be in radio.
because I knew that was the next step. So in 1998, I got a tryout on the air for 30 minutes.
Oh, cool.
So that was like right when I graduated high school, like a year after I graduated high school, and then I got on radio. So I was an on-air mixer on Power at like 19 years old.
Nice.
Yeah, wild.
So, and how does that change the game once you're on the air?
That was when I got to go to my parents and show them a corporate check and be like, this is real.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to go anywhere. Like, this is real now. And I held up I remember I was like, this is the moment where I can pursue this. And I know there's a bigger future with DJing. Because before, I mean, most parents was, you got to go to college. And I was like, nah, it's just not me. School is not just for everyone. You know, it wasn't in my plan. Mm-hmm. So, there was no option B, C, or D. It was just option A was to pursue DJing and music and radio and try and go from there.
Go back to something you said about like the humble brag. I know like what's the art of doing that? Because, you know, certainly being around a radio station, being around promoters, hustlers, like people that are really happy to tell you how great they are.
Right.
And like we know sometimes like if that's done wrong, it's like counterproductive.
Right.
It's annoying, you don't believe it, you know what I mean?
I think the one time that I was awoken to a humble, well, I won't even say it's humble. It was an out of control brag was when Kanye West came to our radio station for the first time as a producer saying he was a rapper. And we're like, this is the dude that produces all the dope tracks, like Izzo and this and that. And we're like, why is he coming to us as a rapper? Like, is the producer turning rapper? And we went to, I think it was called Arnie Morton Steakhouse down the street. Mm-hmm. And we sat there with him. And before the bread came out on the table, he had like rapped three songs to us. And he's like, do you hear what I'm saying? I remember this moment. He's like, do you hear what I'm saying? Do you hear my verse? Do you hear my words? He's like, I produce for Jay. Jay's big. I'm going to be even bigger than that. And we're like, okay, now this is crazy. This dude's out of his mind right here.
Sure.
And by the time we left, I was like, dude, this dude believes in himself more than anything in the world. Like, he already envisions it. Yeah. And I don't know how this stuff kind of came together for me, but I'm like, I need to, and I'm not saying it's just the Kanye moment, but this was one of the moments where I was like, I need to believe that I can take myself to wherever I want to take myself to like bring it to fruition. So that was like one moment. And then, I'm going to use a lot of artist stories because I ran into these people at such a cool time in my life and their life. And then when I was DJing in a lot of Hollywood nightclubs and Justin Timberlake had just broken away from NSYNC and he was not cool. Like at that moment, you're like, dude, you just left NSYNC. You're not cool. Like in everyone's eyes.
Totally.
And he'd be in the club and he was the nicest dude in the world. And he was like, I'm working with Pharrell and my songs are gonna be like this. And then I got to hear Like I Love You before it came out. And I'm like, dude. And he was another one saying like, I know my music's gonna transition me into that world. Like he believed it. Where everyone else around him was like, looking like, you're a corny NSYNC dude that just left the group and you're not gonna go anywhere. And it was another person in my life that was like speaking about his music in a humble way about how powerful it was gonna be. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is dope. So a lot of the times I got to be around so many different recording artists in such a cool moment of their life and in my life that I just was trying to take pieces of everybody's story and everybody's life.
And are you conscious of doing that? Like, can you?
I don't think I was. Yeah. I honestly don't think I was. And I have even another crazier story where I saw the family moment where I was like, wow, like you can be in this world of an artist and still be like a family dude. And I got to go to Dre's house with Damian Young with the DMZA and listen to Chronic 2001 in his living room with just me and DMZA and Dre and his wife was there and his kids were there. Like his little kids are running around and stuff like that. And I'm listening to Chronic 2001 and seeing this dude in family mode too and taking care of like grabbing his kid and picking him up and like moving and then showing us his house like, oh yeah, we're gonna remodel this and this and that. So I'm just like the apprentice now to the radio station exec and I'm seeing all these things and seeing all these artists I idolize and being like, wow, like you really can live in this celebrity world, artist world, music world and still be, whether it's humble, family orientated, or just enjoying your moment in life. So I kind of just
piece, like I said, piece picked off the tree from all these different people in life and kind of stuck with them.
That's great. I read that around the same time you went to a Tony Robbins seminar.
Dude, I went to Tony Robbins when I was 19. Oh, yeah. I think, yeah, like right, right before my son was born. So like 19 years old.
Okay.
And a friend of mine who, he had gone to, I guess, one of these seminars. And once again, I'm like, who the hell is Tony Robbins? Uh-huh. There's, I had never even heard of him.
Sure.
I've never even heard of a life coach or an a lifestyle entrepreneur, whatever he may call him, but motivational speakers. Mm-hmm. I never heard of any of this.
Yeah.
And my friend was just like, come to this with me. You need this in your life. If you don't like it, don't pay me back.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right. And by the end of that first night on Tony Robbins, I'm walking over hot coal and I'm like, this is the crazy, like my energy was through the roof. And
wow.
And I learned a lot from that moment. And I once again took little things from that and went on my path.
What did you take from it?
I think I just, at that moment, I was such in a crazy moment in my life that I knew I had a son coming. So I was 19 years old, trying to make it as a DJ. Like I had just got on radio.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, now I have to raise a kid and I have to grow up. Like, and I have to like make money and really support, not just me, support another mouth, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I think my friend saw that in me, like, dude, this guy needs to be on like the right path and just make sure he knows that you can make this happen, you know, make this world happen. So when I left there, it was just more of kind of like a, I guess probably my first Zen moment where I'm like, I can make anything happen that I want to happen in life.
Wow.
So it was a good time that happened for me and I'm glad I went. Now I listen to his podcast. I watched his his Netflix movie the other day. And I'm like, this is so crazy. I went to this at 19 years old. I didn't know it affected me until later in life. Mm-hmm. I'm like, there's those moments in life that really just change you on your path for the right.
Yeah, that's killer. A steady beat goes 1, 2, 3, 4. A steady heart goes, I love you more. I know sometimes it's confusing. My trouble heart. So if we, you know, jump to today, like you got all this stuff going and I didn't even know half of it. Like, you know, you were telling me about the YouTube show when we were in Brazil.
Yes.
Which I've been watching now. It's great.
You caught some of them. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Electric Taco.
Yeah.
Dude, I watched the Danny Trejo last night.
He's an OG, Danny Trejo.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing stories.
So yeah, I've ventured off and done a lot of different things.
Yeah. So, I guess what I want to ask is how, so, and I know you're in the sneaker business.
Yeah.
You got Crossover.
I got Crossover. It's just my two sneaker stores.
Yeah, which I've been to. I didn't know those were yours.
Yeah, 8 years in doing those, which retail's a crazy whole different world for me.
So how does your experience, your training as a DJ affect all those different things as well as your production?
Well, the first business I ever got involved in was outside of DJing was opening a shoe store 8 years ago in Santa Barbara, and we opened 6 years ago in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But that was straight up like I feel almost every DJ's passion outside of collecting records is shoes.
Sure.
And the first moment I realized that was the Eazy-E Radio 12-inch record. It's on Radio and Eazy does it on the other side. And in the back of that, he's wearing like Jordan 4s, true blue Jordan 4s, and I'm like, damn, those are dope shoes. He has like clean Jordans on. And then even like my Adidas, I didn't put it together yet. I was too young to really be like, I need to look fly.
Yeah.
And then when Eazy did it, maybe because I'm a West Coast kid, I was like, he had the full Jordan jumpsuit, but I was like, I love shoes. Like that makes your outfit. So I was always like buying shoes and kind of whenever I could, if I had the money, if I wasn't going to use it on records. But then, DJ AM was the one who really introduced me how to buy shoes.
Yeah.
And because that's when eBay
collecting
started. And I started learning on buying, you know, Dunks and Air Force Ones and Air Maxes. And then I was like, oh, this is like actually a business where you can buy them for this and you can resell them. You could do this, you could do that. And then I was like, there has to be a way I can get shoes for free. And I was like, open a shoe store.
Yeah.
So I met people, you know, throughout my
journey, and someone talked about opening a shoe store, and this guy said, I have a location, and we just pieced it together and made it happen.
So was there any worry? I mean, obviously that's going into a business that you're not, you don't know other than your passion for the sneakers, but you don't know the retail business.
None of us had retail experience.
Yeah.
All three at the time, there's two partners now, but all three of us then, no one had retail experience. And I think that was why it took off at the beginning, because no one knew what they were doing. So you didn't have any rules. There was no right or wrong, you know?
So is that a good idea? Just like...
I believe in that. Like, I don't care. Like, I want to make mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm cool with making mistakes. Like, because I think, I mean, from all those mistakes I've gone through, I've kept growing and learning. Like, all right, never do that one. I'll never do this. Mm-hmm. I'll never do that. Why did I invest in that? I lost my ass over there. Okay, let me try it. I'll never invest in anything I don't believe in, or I don't fully, you know, love the concept, the idea. So I still have no clue what I'm doing. I just know that I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of a good way to look at it. Yeah. Like, I don't mind messing up on all these things. And I want to take the long cut, not the shortcut.
So I'm how was the, to make the move to producing? Obviously, you're still DJing as well, but how did you think about that?
When I was on radio and going to all these sessions, because after we met Kanye, we got invited to go to his sessions, and mm-hmm. I got to see him working on an ASR-10. Mm-hmm. And then we met Timbaland in the early days, and we got to go to see Timbaland doing sessions and hanging with him till 5-6 in the morning and watching him be on an ASR-10. Mm-hmm. And then the Alkoholics, who I really liked, their West Coast hip-hop group, E-Swift using an MPC 2000 and an ASR-10 MIDI sync together. And I'm like, this is dope. Like, how do you... So I was seeing everyone's sessions and how they were working and Pro Tools, and everyone had a Mac computer. So I'm like, all right, I have to get a Mac. I have to save up and get a Mac, first of all. Then I have to get Pro Tools, and then I have to figure out how to get an MPC. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then I started like in probably 2001. I got an MPC 2000, and I just started...
So you're still on the air.
Yeah, I was still on the air, and I was trying to make beats on the side.
Yeah.
And sampling, and just kind of really raw hip-hop beats I was trying to work on. And for years, I was doing that and DJing, but I never really put anything out. And then I was really into production, and in 2004, I got a Vegas gig, and it just literally grabbed me and threw me in Vegas, and like, this is where you need to put your energy in, because this is the gold rush for... It's going to be the gold rush for DJs. Mm-hmm. So I saw it early. So I got wet into production. I got my fingers wet in production and producing and learning how to just get around and seeing studio sessions go down. Mm-hmm. So then Vegas really is what took me away from it for a little bit, and now I'm back again.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're digging this one, I want to stick with the radio theme. I'm going to take you back in the Rebel Radio archives. My man Garth Trinidad, he's a DJ on KCRW here in LA, as well as a producer, music supervisor, all kind of other good things too. He's got some great stories if you want to go back and hear that one, of course, after you listen to the rest of DJ Vice.
I've heard DJs say, like, you know, learning to read the crowd, kind of then it helps you make music.
Right.
Does that work?
It does, because now more recently than ever that I'm putting out a lot of music and working with the right people, like great, talented producers and songwriters and everything. I think my greatest strength now that I'm finally comfortable with is knowing that I have something that they don't have in a studio session. I have the knowledge of reading crowds for 20 plus years and being in clubs for 20 plus years, and I understand that some of these people are in studios for 20 plus years, and they're not in front of crowds like the way I am. Mm-hmm. So I know that my ear is tuned a different way that their ear is tuned. So I really do feel like when I sit in sessions, the ideas I can bring up, or the structure changes, or even just a slight, you know, drum change makes like night and day difference for what'll work for me and for my sets and for the audience I play to. And it's dope, because I'll have those aha moments with some producers, like, oh shit, I didn't think of that. And in my mind, I'm like, dude, this person's beyond good at producing. Yeah. It's so cool to give them some like little
you know, advice and it works and it goes like the right way, you know? Yeah. And sometimes I tell them something that like, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it does help. A lot of the greatest were DJs, right? Like Dre was a DJ. Timbaland mm-hmm. was a DJ. Jermaine still DJs. Mm-hmm. Little John DJs. Like mm-hmm. Premier. Like, I mean, everyone has a lot of those, the guys that I looked up to.
Yeah.
Pete Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Like all these guys are like dope DJs as well.
So what about like, you know, everyone you just mentioned, I know you grew up in hip hop and, you know, that was your thing.
Yeah.
But now you're making all types of music.
Right. You know? I always have loved all types of genres. Yeah. I just feel that my foundation was hip hop.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But was it a conscious choice to, I know you got pop records. I know you worked with Linkin Park. Like,
yeah.
Is that a conscious thing to like move across genres or like why is that a good idea?
It was definitely a conscious choice because when I got into like playing clubs in Hollywood, like in 2000, probably 2002, 2003, I met DJ AM in LA and I went to some of his clubs in LA and got to play with him. And I'm like, yo, you're DJing an open format set that's basically a cooler wedding set.
Right.
Because I DJed so many weddings and I was playing
yeah,
80s and I was sure. playing like funk and soul and then I was playing hip hop and pop and dance and it was all over the place. But you're doing it in such a cooler way, crossing genres mm-hmm. and it's like organized chaos, your mixes, like they're going all over the place, but it works. So I was always just starting to really love like the fact of being an open format DJ and I hate that word open format, but I mean like,
yeah.
I call it genre bending now sure. more than anything, like bending all the genres together. And I really like that. I was like, this is all the shit I love.
Yeah.
Like, so I've never been one to just be like, oh, I only listen to hip hop. I mm-hmm. only listen to alternative. I only listen to this because I grew up in such a mixed household. So when I got back into production, I'm like, I don't want to just be in one lane. And then sometimes people are like, oh, you don't have a sound then. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. I want to just have music that I enjoy working on and playing out.
So is that important? Like some, you know, I think some people would say, you know, people come to Premier because they want that Premier sound, right? If he brought them something with big guitars and whatever, like,
yeah.
Who knows what?
Rick Rubin pulls it off.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, there's like guys at Rick Rubin that can work with like the Dixie Chicks, right?
Yeah.
And then he could do like Johnny Cash and he could do Beastie Boys and he can do, and I'm not saying I'm even on that level. I'm just saying there's people that have figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely still so fresh in this game mm-hmm. even at the age I'm at that I'm still looking forward to like learning all this shit and figuring out how to make it work
sure
I think that's one thing, just to be open to it, like however it's going to work out, it'll work out.
Yeah, it's interesting, like radio seems to be the last, like radio is so tied to genres,
yeah,
right, whereas like clubs have changed, streaming, obviously people are streaming whatever they want, you know. Even back in the day, like MTV, except for they had their genre shows, and then they had their like most of the day they're just playing like whatever. I don't know. It seems.
I think one thing too though is I spoke about my son earlier because I just think he's such a big influence on me, is that I saw him lose like genres. Like he would listen to like pop music, and then he would like jump into hip hop. And then now he'll go to like an EDM festival, but he's like, I love the music, but I'm not gonna listen to it when I'm in my car.
Mm-hmm.
I'll listen to it at the festival.
Yeah.
And then it was like all over the place. And
does that make it harder as a DJ? Like, is it harder to program a set that way?
I just gotta keep current.
Yeah.
And I gotta be able to keep an open mind with music
and
understand like some of the mumbling MCs, like it makes sense. Like if you figure out the mumbles and understand what the concept is or what the thought process is behind some of these songs, then I appreciate it, because I don't want to get lost in the mix and never, I want to keep up, I want to keep ahead of the game, I want to stay current. I appreciate how music can change, so
yeah.
It does get tough on some songs, like why is this song big,
right?
Sure. What is it about this song?
Yeah sure
So it's definitely but it also keeps me excited to just like really stay up on things.
So what motivates you with all that to do the
the YouTube show, the podcast, the you know, all the other stuff.
To connect with people however I can, I think. Yeah. I do the I started a YouTube show, it's Electric Taco. We're like on 14 episodes in right now. And that was just for like the fun of it. Like I got a Tesla and I was like, this is dope to finally have like a car I've always wanted. How can I use it to my benefit and how can I have fun with it? Yeah. So I was like, I'll pick up, I watched Seinfeld, comedians getting coffee.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, I have my coffee right now, but I also love tacos more than coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm born and raised in LA and we got them everywhere here. So I was like, I'll pick up one of my homies, we'll throw some GoPros in the car and we'll roll out and get some tacos. And we tried it out and it worked. Then I was like, I know so many people that come out to clubs that I meet, that I connect with in a club. Like, how can I connect with these people outside of the club world?
Yeah.
Outside of an event that I'm at DJing or something. So I was like, I'll just start hitting people up that I know.
Many know me as Vice the DJ, a native Angeleno who rocks clubs night after night. What you may not know is that my passion for music is just as big as my passion for food. I decided to share this with the world and bring some friends along for the ride. From the valley to the west side and everywhere in between, join me as I venture out to find some of the best tacos in LA. This is...
And then it just spiraled into like Swaggy P to Rick Fox to Mario Lopez to... You saw Danny Trejo to P-Rod.
I watched the Angela Johnson.
Angela Johnson, the comedian.
That was
so
dope.
And it's cool because I've known all these people somehow from out and about. And it's cool to hear everybody's story and just on a positive note. Reggie Bush. Like, I have George Lopez coming up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I have Joe Coy, Filipino comedian that's that I great. Love. So, like, all these different random people that it's, like, spiraling into, like, reaching out. And now when people find my music... they can find these episodes and get a little life lesson out of them. Or people find these episodes and then they find my music. Yeah. Roy Choi was a really dope one, like rolling around with him in LA from K-Town and like hearing his story of how you start a food truck revolution and like...
Amazing. He's been on the show.
Yeah, he's dope. Yeah. I love him.
Love
Poppy, they call him Poppy.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, it kind of goes back to what I said earlier about the people I met along the road in life.
Uh-huh.
And I got all these little... bits of information from. It's kind of cool to do this again and hopefully someone will watch this and pick up something from Roy Choi or Rick Fox or whoever it may be and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it sparked that little moment in their life that might take them down that path.
So you seem like you had all these like lessons that have kind of shaped how you approach things. Is that, do you have mentors or are you like figuring stuff out on
now? I do. Yeah. Now I do. Yeah, because my wife is a life coach, which is crazy.
Really?
So like, yeah, when I met her and she's like a certified life coach for like the last 6 years.
Dude,
my wife's my first mentor.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's funny. I know we just spent time together in Brazil.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that, but I could see that now after talking to her.
Like, yeah. She's deep as it is.
Yeah, that's dope.
So she's introduced me to a lot of different ways of thinking about things and seeing the world. And
like what? What's something that stands out?
Just at least like believing in, I mean, I kind of mentioned that I believe in what's supposed to come. I foresee my future in a sense. Like I always be like, oh, I really want to have George. Like when I started that Electric Taco on episode 2, I'm like, George Lopez needs to be on this show. Like that dude needs to get on. This is
nice.
And it's already like now in the works of the day we're gonna film it. So I'm like, I know it'll happen. I don't ever be like, oh, that'll probably never happen. Can't get that. I always believe and speak of it as it's happening already. So I don't ever say like, oh, I'll never be able to get Andre 3000 on a track. Because that is my bucket list MC to have on a track. I'm always like,
right?
I know I'm going to have Andre 3000 one day on a track. So she has taught me to always reiterate myself and speak as if you know it will happen. In the humble brag way.
Yeah.
You know?
That's great.
So then I have mentors. I have a good friend of mine that's a mentor in a family type of way. And I have another good friend of mine that's a mentor in a business type of way. And I learned that from her, having mentors and having people that you literally ask, like, will you be my mentor where... I can call you and ask you questions about life or questions about business or this and that. Or you check on me and hold me accountable.
Yeah.
Same way I have a trainer at the gym. I can't make myself get up and go.
Right.
He texts me like, are you on the way? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
I just, it's good to have that accountability team around you.
Yeah, that's cool. What has been the biggest surprises since you started this? Like, what's been the... What did you not expect when you got started? That's been.
I guess it is still a surprising point right now to still be DJing, still be in a sense relevant, still mm-hmm. be 14 years of. I started my Vegas residency in 2004, so like over 13 years, yeah. And to still be playing in Vegas, I remember the first week we were out there, like a month in, I was playing like a couple nights, and one of my boys was like, "Yo, how long do you think this is gonna last in Vegas for you? Like a month, right. 2 months?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "I don't know." So it's like now we're all the way down here, and I'm still a resident in Vegas every week. So these are some big awe moments, like, wow, this is crazy.
What's been harder than you expected?
I think the hardest point for me would be to just accept change at sometimes. Like, I know, like, to realize when I'm in a comfort zone, a comfort space, to be like, don't be comfortable. Mm-hmm. Get out of that comfort zone and change.
And is there something you do, like, to get out of that?
Just do it. Fear, yeah. I learned that, and it's an acronym for fear is uh-huh. false expectations appearing real.
Yeah.
And I remember when I learned, I was like, dude, that's exactly what fear is. Like, you don't know whether this move that you're going to jump and do is right or wrong, or just do it. Like, just try it and trust the process and accept it. Like, so that, and then I think another hard part is just the balance of everything, is the juggling of, like, so I have an 18-year-old kid, mm-hmm. and I have an 18-month daughter. So it's the like I was like a reset button on me, like start over again, yeah. And to be married, and to travel, to have late nights, early nights.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't trade it for anything. So I love it. I love the fact that I'm still around music, because at the end of the day, that's what got me here, and I mm-hmm. love it. Mm-hmm. I have to. What's the hardest thing? I have to stay and listen to music all the time. Like, I'll keep up on everything. Like, that's what I love doing as a kid. So I'm still good doing that now.
Yeah, that's great. Nice. Let me see. I have like a speed round that I like to end off with.
Good. I drink coffee. I can go fast.
That's nice. well, before we get to that, you mentioned the bucket list. So what else? What's
So Andre 3000 has been my bucket list MC, and I just met him for the first time.
Nice.
It's crazy. I was at the Magic Convention in Vegas, the clothing convention out there, and I was walking through, looking at some brands for our store and everything, just looking, and I hear the voice behind me, and I'm like, that's Andre. I knew it right. I turn around, and Andre 3000 is right there, and he's with my boy, Jeff Staple, who has a brand, Staple and Pigeon Dunks and all that good stuff. But I look and I'm like, Jeff Staples with Andre 3000. I get to meet this dude finally. Like, I think I met him way back in the radio days, like once. Sure. But I met him and I got to shake his hand. So I was like, yo, like, and I gave him the humble brag. I was like, yo, it's good to finally meet you. And I look forward to the day that we work together on a track, because I know it'll happen one day. Maybe not now, but it will happen.
Nice.
And he's like, yo, okay, cool. That's what's up. Like, yeah. And I was like, yeah. And I left it at that. It wasn't like, yo, we got to connect. Give me your numbers. Da, 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 da. Like, it was just the little slide in humble brag.
So that's the piece I think, like, people don't get, you know, is like finding a balance, knowing when to back off, when to come on.
Yeah.
When, you know what I mean?
And exactly.
I see it. I know, you know, you see it all the time. Somebody's, you know, they got, back in the day, they used to have their demo tape, and it's like, you'd see the one guy that's like standing in the corner afraid to give it to anybody.
Right.
And the other guy that's like shoving it down your throat.
Right.
It's like finding that right balance.
Yep. And there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it. I don't know how you teach it, but there's a way to do it. Yeah.
So he's bucket list MC.
Yeah. And I'll just leave it at him. Okay. Because when I knock that out, then I'll put someone else on the bucket list.
Okay.
No option B or C.
No, I love
or
it.
Or D. Just A. Option A.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So if you can go back and give yourself, let's say, the 18-year-old advice, one piece of advice, what would it be?
The 18-year-old advice, and I asked everyone this question on Electric Taco, and now someone asked me.
Oh, it's the worst.
No, mine would be, honestly, because at the point where I'm at right now, I just really wished I wouldn't have stepped away from production as heavy as I did for that gap of those years, because I had to play so much catch-up.
Yeah.
I really wish I would have embraced staying in the studio a little bit more, and I also wish I would have joined band in high school.
Oh, really?
I wish, I wish someone would have said, I wish one of my counselors in high school said, I see how much you love music.
you're a DJ, like, why don't you try the band out? Why don't you learn what music, the structure is, mm-hmm. about, you know, chord theory or this and that at a young age, and not looked at like the band, like, oh, those are the dudes on the marching field before the football game? Nah, yeah. I'm cool. Like, so I DJed a lot during high school. I played, like, in the quad. I played at basketball games, mm-hmm. and football games, but I wish I would have also been in the band with everybody. I think Pharrell was in the band and stuff like that.
I'm down.
Yeah, I wish I would have gotten the band.
So maybe this leads into that, but what talent have you always wished you had more of?
The talent I wish I had more of, it's the only athletic talent I had at a younger age. I used to play ice hockey.
Oh, wow.
From like the, right, like that 9-year-old gap I was telling you about, 9 to 12, right before I got
in the DJ thing. In LA.
So crazy. And being in LA, what are you, yeah. a Mexican playing hockey? That makes no sense. Yeah. But a neighbor of mine who was the manager at the Pasadena Ice Skating Rink, and I got to go there. So I wish I could still like tear it up in an ice hockey game. You said you played tennis this morning.
Yeah.
Imagine if I was like, yo, I just came from an ice hockey game. You'd be like, this dude's tough.
That's crazy. Yeah, for sure.
A tooth missing and everything. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, tennis, I'm just going to twist the ankle. So what other career outside of music would you have if you knew, this is a Tony Robbins question.
Yeah.
What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail?
Another career, I don't know why it's been coming up more, but I want my Cheers, which is AKA like a little bar restaurant. Right. Like, I want to be able to have my little spot where I'm okay. like, oh yeah, that's my Cheers.
Yeah.
And
oh, man, I can see that happening.
Luckily, one of my mentors is heavy in the restaurant game, and I have a lot of different people I know that have run restaurants. I don't say never, but at the moment, I don't want a nightclub. Uh-huh. That's just, I would rather be like, yo, let's go have a drink or let's grab a little bite at my spot right here and hang. I think we're at that age like where it's like all about like taking it down a notch.
I love that. Yeah, that's a great one. Okay, so if I worked for you, if I was on your team, what would I hear you say over and over?
It's mine is just honestly like, and I have a sister I talk to all the time and everything. It's just be here because you want to be here and do it because you love it. Like don't do anything for a check, because I truly feel the reason I'm doing what I'm doing and where I got in my life, because I never did it for a check. I never cared about like how much you gonna make for that gig. Nah, let's get a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like I just didn't. And this is probably the worst business advice, but money was never like my goal. Like I didn't care. My goal was happiness. Mm-hmm. My goal was like, and it stems back to that moment of seeing the DJ play for a crowd, of not being like, how much did he make up there? And these people are doing that. Like it was just like. It's chase that happiness, not that check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's that's a hard one. Like you say, it's not good business advice, but I think making art for money.
Yeah.
Is a tough business to be in. Like when that's your goal.
Right. When that's your goal. Yeah. You can feel that. You can read it.
Yeah.
When people, even I see it when I'm, if I watch a DJ set or that, like this dude is not doing it because he loves it. Sometimes, a lot of times, producers get stuck DJing now because they have to, because they produce such a big record and you have to go out and DJ.
Yeah.
But your foundation was never a DJ, and you're like, I don't want to be in front of a crowd. Right. And I get that. You want to be in a studio. Like, we're in a beautiful studio room right now. Like, I understand that if this is your world, you want to live in here.
Yeah.
You don't want to be fighting through a crowd or a festival to get up on stage to have 18-year-olds jumping up and down and going, you're like, I don't want that. I want to be in front of my screen and make music.
Yeah.
So that would be a hard one too.
Yeah, I'm sure. So other than Andre 3000, who would you be most excited to learn was a fan of yours?
I think I've honestly, it's crazy, but I've already got it. Like when Timbaland became a fan of me, and like when me and him became like friends and I got to be around him and invited to studios, and still to this day where he's like, I made an 80s mix called Breakfast Clubbin. DJ Vice.
Living in a lonely world. He took the midnight.
And he was always like, that's my favorite mix ever. Like, da, 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 nice. Like, and he's, and ever since then, when I made it way back, he's always been like the homie and let me roll through. And I, when I was getting back into production years back again, he was like, yo, let's sit down. Let me, and he gave me an hour of his time and I got to play him beats and give me feedback. And yeah. I'm like, I walked away like on a high, like, and it, we were at the Hit Factory in Miami. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, this is crazy to be able to go back to him and still play
That's
him
so
stuff.
Cool. Yeah.
So it's dope. Him and then maybe Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
Bring him back. Yeah, he'll be like, yeah. Well, we want Vice as a guest.
Do you, so what, I don't know if it's Tony Robbins or not, but what book can you think of that's changed your life?
So I'm not a big book person. My wife is, and there's books all over our house.
Yeah.
But the book that I am reading right now that I'll say is Strong Father, Strong Daughter.
Oh, cool.
And I was passed that by a friend in the gym, and he was like, you had a daughter? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, you have a daughter? And I'm like, no. And he's like, this is your first? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, read this. And I'm like, oh, man. So I'm almost done with it. I'm like, okay, this is, that book happened for the right reason for a moment, and it's changing my life. Because I've raised a son. Now, daughter's a whole different game. I'm just...
So
I think it's happening right now as I'm reading this book.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Changing my perspective.
Nice. Okay. Do you collect anything other than, well, I know sneakers and records.
Sneakers and records, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sad to
that's
say.
That's right a lot.
But I stopped collecting vinyl because I have so much of it, but I never got rid of my vinyl. So I still have all my vinyl. I got rid of all the crap, like the junk ones.
Mm-hmm.
Ja Rule's and like, no offense, but I mean to say I don't need a Ja Rule record.
Stuff you're never gonna play.
Yeah, I have it on my MP3. I'm good at that. But all my classics and my soul, my funk, and I have all that. But record, shoes, I still buy. Even though I have a store and all that, like I still go and buy. If I'm out on the road, I'm like, oh, they have me. I'll just grab them.
Yeah.
So that's like a bad thing. Yeah. They're everywhere. They're all over my house.
That's all right. You know, you gotta have something.
Yeah. And hats. I guess I buy hats all the time.
Right. What, I think we actually talked about this in Brazil, but what movie do you think you've seen the most?
The movie I've seen the most, for me is Goonies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've seen Goonies the most.
That's
and then
a great one.
A strong second is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And then
the Johnny Depp or the,
No, the OG. Gene Wilder, yeah.
Yeah, that's the shit.
Yeah, those are probably the two strong ones for me.
Right.
I don't know
ones.
Why, but they're just my childhood
joints.
No,
those are good ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite DJ?
Favorite DJ of all time? It has to be Jazzy Jeff. Yeah. I think that was like the first DJ I really saw like do everything so smooth.
Yeah.
For me, like.
Me too.
And still to this day, I'm like, I just watched his Boiler Room episode. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, bro. You don't lose it at all. Everything's so good. So Jazzy, yeah.
Yeah.
And he did a remix to one of my first singles I put out.
Oh, really?
I put out a song on my own little label called Flight Club. It's called World Is Our Playground.
Feeling the times change like waves of sound. A new day's already here. It comes into the light from underground.
And the hook talks about Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't really know Jazzy.
Yeah.
And now I do, but I didn't really know him.
Yeah.
But I was like, when we worked on the record, I'm like, while we were working on the record, I'm like, Jazzy Jeff has to do a remix of this. I have no budget really. I mean, I'll pay out my, whatever I gotta do.
Yeah.
And then I connected with Jazzy Jeff and he's like, yo, like, he was a fan of my DJ bag I made. Mm-hmm. So I had made a DJ bag with Toomey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I made my own DJ bag with them. And he had one. And he's like, yo, I got you. And he did the remix on the strength.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm down. I like the record. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Hell, it happened? Yeah. So
that's dope.
Yeah, it's a dope moment.
That's incredible. Yeah, definitely. I love Jeff. I didn't even know about the Toomey stuff. So is that like, do you like that kind of like brand collaboration stuff?
Hell yeah. I'm a big fan of Toomey.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of certain brands. And then when I'm a fan of them, like, same thing about, like, I was a fan of Nike and I wanted to open a shoe store. And I was a fan of Toomey and I was like, someone has to know someone at Toomey. And one of my friends did. Like, put me in the mix. Introduce me. And they talked to me. And I'm like, can I sit with you guys? I just need to explain something about your bags and your DJ stuff. And they let me come up. And I explained to the head design director of Toomey how I use his bag as a DJ bag. And he's like, what do you, this is like a business traveler's bag. Right. Why are you using it as a DJ bag? I'm like, you got this compartment, you got this, you got this. But if we do this and you move this, 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 it'll be the best DJ bag ever. And he's like, all right. And then probably a year and a half in the process, then we worked on designing a bag and I released it with Toomey.
So we
released 380 bags based on the Airbus A380, mm-hmm. like everything around travel. And they sold for $495 each and it sold out in 4.5 hours.
Damn.
So it was a dope bag and we did them. And then they were like, let's remake them. And I was like, don't remake it.
Yeah.
Leave it as like the most limited edition bag.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back again sooner or later and do another bag.
Ah, that's cool.
So yeah. So I wasn't chasing the money on
right.
it.
Yeah.
I was just chasing like the, let's make the best DJ bag ever.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone rocked it, like from Diplo to Calvin to Jazzy Jeff to, like, there was tons of DJs that had it.
That's so.
Yeah. I just, rest in peace, I just put mine to rest. It was so beat.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's like, don't you have another? I'm like, yeah, I have one brand new one in a box. Like, right, I'm not going to open. That one's on ice. Like, you have two pairs of shoes, one's on ice.
For sure.
So, yeah, that was a big collaboration for me. So, bucket list collab is Nike.
Nice.
Yeah.
What do you
want to
make?
Sorry to my Adidas people.
What do you want to make?
Damn, I'm not even picky. No. I mean, if I could, I think I would go for honestly an Air Max.
Okay.
Like a 97, like an Air Max 90 probably. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I switch up my shoes all the time, so it's hard to really say like. Yeah, Jordans. I mean, I always loved Jordans, but I think I would go for an Air Max.
Nice.
Yeah, it's an all-purpose shoe.
I'm an Air Max fan.
Yeah, and you got your J's on today though, right? Twos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the most comfortable ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never been a fan of two. I just couldn't. They didn't work
it's
for me.
It's a different thing. They're like some Italian design.
Yeah.
It's like a whole different thing, but they're so comfortable.
Came with it.
It's crazy. What's?
Let me ask you a question. What's your favorite shoe?
I mean, probably Air Max.
Yeah.
Yeah. 90 or Air Max 1 even.
Air Max 1s are good too.
I like them. I got I got a pair of Air Max 1 sneaker boots.
And they're
like a mid.
All days, right?
You were there. So good. So comfortable.
Do you have a big collection as well?
No. I mean, I wear everything.
Okay, yeah.
I don't ice any of them.
Yeah.
But you know, like I do the best I can.
My one shoe that's on display at my store in Vegas, if you ever go by, is I have the Air Mag from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Because they did a release of those a while back. Actually, they re-released them, but I did it a while back, and I scored them on eBay for like $3,800, and now they're at like $10,000.
They're crazy, yeah.
Yeah. Those ones I won't wear. those stay in the box.
Yeah, yeah. No,
they stay
of
in
course.
A cube, like showing. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, the shoes are like, it's like gold. The stock goes up on them.
For
as
sure.
long as you buy right.
Yeah. Yeah, we had Josh from StockX.
Oh, yeah?
We had him on the show right when he was launching.
Oh, that's dope.
And
okay.
I know their shit is like, it's crazy.
Shoes, man.
It's a whole crazy business.
Yeah. But I didn't get to buy a lot of shoes growing up as much as I really wanted to, because also in the early days, I heard you talking about this with, I think it was Chalk or whatever, I think it was on one of his episodes, was you had to really chase vinyl, and whether you were, if you didn't have the hookup, you had to buy it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So you're buying doubles and they were $4.99 each or $5.99 each, and you're spending $12-$15 and you're like, that's for
but
just
you had to,
one.
But you had to chase shoes too. Like, I mean, now you do online, whatever.
Yeah.
But back then I remember, you know, you'd go to Sporty LA.
Right.
And you'd kind of get lucky.
Is that your spot when you're, well, you moved.
Back then.
Back then, yeah. Sporty LA on Melrose.
In San Francisco, there was a couple spots. But in San Francisco, it was like, I mean, in the 80s, it was like Shell Toes. Clydes, Chucks, and then, you know, Jordan a little bit. Legends. I was big into Legends.
Legends. Wow. I think
But there was only like a couple spots that you could go there. It was like the surplus stores.
Right.
And they would have a couple things.
My first, you spoke about tennis. Get this. This is my first, it's still my all-time favorite shoe. I wouldn't do it as a Nike, as a collab, but it's my all-time favorite shoe is the Agassi.
I got them in the trunk. That's
do
what
you?
I play. That's what I play in.
Those are fire.
I play in Agassiz. I was playing in Federer's, and I like them.
Oh, wow.
Like, I know the technology or whatever, but I didn't like the feel.
The ones and I rock with
Adam,
the Aquas. The
Adam
Aqua.
From Stussy.
Yeah.
Adam Weissman.
Yeah.
He plays in Agassiz. We play together.
Wow.
And he put me up on those.
Those are still the hottest shoes ever.
Yeah.
Those are so fire.
No, I love them because you can wear them. You
Dude,
can wear them off
so
the court.
I have, yeah. I have a brand new pair on ice. I have the ones I wear and then the other
one.
Yeah, they're comfortable to play
in. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. The OG ones? Like
except they're hot because they're leather.
Yeah, yeah.
But
exactly.
Otherwise, no, they you know, they.
Damn. I don't
know.
So if I ever go to play tennis with you, I'm gonna bring those out.
Come on out. We'll get Adam and Mike. We'll do a doubles.
No skills. I took like one little class in high school, and I was like, this is not for me at all.
We're not good. Mike's okay. I'm not.
No, I'll be on the sideline. I'll DJ for you guys while you're playing. There you go.
That's fresh. That's fresh. Dude, thanks for doing
this,
man.
Yes, sir.
This is so much fun. I appreciate
Rebel
it.
Rebel Radio. I finally got down.
Oh, yeah. How's everybody find you online?
Oh, yeah. So it's easy to find me online. It's just at DJ Vice, DJ V-I-C-E. It's my Twitter. It's my Instagram. It's my YouTube. It's my Facebook. It's everything. I nailed all the names down.
Do you have a favorite? Is there one channel that you're more...
My Insta story, my Instagram story is probably the most active that I'm always on, but I mean, I'm heavy on all my socials.
Yeah.
Snapchat, yeah, everywhere.
Gotta
just
be.
Hit me. I hit everybody back.
Nice.
Twitter,
love it.
Whatever. Social okay. Security number is...
Yo, that's a wrap. That was my man, DJ Vice. Some great stuff from him. Shout out to Vice for coming through. Make sure you leave us a nice review on iTunes, 5 stars, of course. Hit us on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. That's Rebel Radio Net. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio.